Welcome to Leanne's Voice podcast. I'm so glad you decided to watch, listen, read, etc. Do it all to catch up on this amazing speaking tips podcast, where I always try and give lots of information to women in business or working their side hustle or doing a mixture of them all. If you're going to be a woman working in corporate where you need to speak effectively in the business format, this podcast is for you. And of course, I'm going to ask you to listen, enjoy all of the podcasts, but you know the drill. I ask, beg, plead you to subscribe, click the notifications button, give me a thumbs up, write a nice 5-star review for me as well, wherever you listen on Spotify, iTunes, whichever platform you pick, all right? Let's crack into this podcast. Okay, so ladies, on today's podcast, I've got such an exciting and interesting guest for you. His name is George Hendley, and he is the coach at the Speakers Academy. His focus is to work with business leaders who want to speak with confidence. The Speakers Academy draw from over 40 years of unique and varied work experience and have over 27 years of successful business ownership too. They have actively engaged in both the corporate and nonprofit arenas, with a special focus in the financial services and the healthcare industries too. George has been a Diamond Award winner twice for the Wiley Publishing Selling and delivering workshops for over 25 years. Plus, not forgetting he was also awarded the Mentor of the Year Award by the company in 2001. So ladies and gents who are listening, I welcome you today, George Hendley. Welcome to the podcast today, George.
Lynn, it is a pleasure being with you today. And I have to say this before we go any further. I really love listening to your voice and the accent that you have. Aww. And you may be thinking, oh, he's got a Texas accent. Not really. Mine's kind of a mixed potpourri from coast to coast. But yeah, it's getting a little bit more of a drawl since I've been here for 35 years.
Wow. Yeah, your accent is a mixture of things. It's not quite that Texan drawl, as you call it. Definitely not. But yeah, I'm so glad to have you on the show today and just to really hear more about you. So I was just thinking, there's so much things that we can talk about, but I know we've only got a short amount of time today, so I thought let's start off bit by bit and we'll go through a couple of questions. So I thought, first of all, it's quite a big question actually. I was thinking, right, you know about the 11 core delivery skills. What are they, and how do they make the foundation of a great presentation?
Good. I like that question. I gave it to you. Well, Leanne, and all of you wonderful listeners out there in Leanne Landville, the way I look at a presentation is what I call more holistically, bigger picture. And I think in terms of every single day, every day, if you're talking to even one person, you're making a presentation.
And
we too oftentimes think in terms of presentations being in a real formal type of way. That's not the way I see it. Every day, we're making both formal, perhaps, but especially informal presentations. So our whole day is peppered, spiced, put together with presentation after presentation after presentation. Some are visual, as in the connection that Leanne and I share right now. Some are strictly auditory, as in on the phone. And so we have these different kinds of presentation. Some are one-on-one or one-on-three or one-on-five. It could be just with a group of your friends, your peers, your work buddies, your playmates. But in the bigger world, thinking in terms of every day gives us a chance to practice presentation skills. Now, back to that specific question. With this holistic view that I tend to look at presentations, I say that every great presentation has three specific parts. There's a preparation piece, there's a delivery piece, and then a follow-through piece. So let's talk specifically about the delivery piece. That's the piece that gets people nervous. That's the piece that causes them to think, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this and not look like a fool?
Yes.
And And the bottom line is, you've been doing presentations since the first time you were talking to mommy and daddy and saying, goo, 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 ba, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. So take the edge off. Chill, shall we say, you know? Have a brew. Take it easy on this whole thing.
Yeah.
And realize this can be very conversational. As a matter of fact, I believe the better presentations are just that. Mm-hmm. They are truly not a one-way diatribe, but a conversation. It's a dialogue that you're having. Sometimes you'll ask a question and it is rhetorical and you're not really expecting your audience to give you any verbal response, maybe a nod of the head. That's a good thing. But bottom line, if we keep our presentation delivery in a conversational way, then we quickly start to eliminate the nerves issues that tend to go oftentimes with a more formal presentation.
Yeah.
All right. Now, again, focusing back on that delivery piece.
Delivery. Mm-hmm.
The delivery piece is that piece that tends to make people nervous. And there's two basic reasons. They're afraid of being rejected. Or they're afraid of failing. Rejection or failure. Nobody likes it. I don't like it. You don't like it. Nobody likes rejection or feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
So again, let's just take those two pieces off the table, because most people truly want you to succeed and deliver your message well.
Yeah.
They don't want to listen to a message that's not going to help them.
No, so true.
They want to hear something that's really going to inform, inspire, influence, or entertain them.
Yeah.
That's really what they want. And if you can even hit on one or two of those four ends, then you're doing well.
Definitely.
Now, I look at a presentation as in what I call the three Vs. The delivery aspect is the three Vs. The three Vs stand for visual, vocal, and verbal. Visual, vocal, and verbal. Now, I have a great visual of my friend Leanne, and that makes the conversation that much more enjoyable, because I can see her animated face, her smile, her engagement. She's writing, she's taking notes. That makes me excited to be able to stay in tune with her. So I have a great visual of her. But when you are the, quote, speaker, when you're the presenter, when you're the one that's on stage, on the platform, or just sitting there again, chatting with your friends at coffee, then there are certain things that they are looking at in the light of you delivering your message. And I oftentimes say this very simply, you are the message. You are the message. Everything about you makes the message. Now, what do I really mean by that? Very simply this. The first and most important part of you being the message is the visual of you. The visual of you is either going to make you or potentially break you, as in make the message fuzzy, make the message unclear, make the message difficult to hear. So there are five aspects of the visual. There are four aspects of the vocal. There are two aspects of the verbal. Now, Leanne, I've been talking for a while. Do you want me to keep yapping, or do you want to ask another question along
no,
the way?
No, I've written down that there's five on the visual, four on the vocal, and two on the verbal. Can you, like, so in visual, I never really looked at a presentation in these things, because I would have thought, isn't vocal verbal? Is verbal not the same as vocal? For me, of my understanding of that. And then when you can you break down within the five parts within the visual, then what's the difference between the four points in the vocal, then the difference of the two parts in the verbal? That would be helpful, I think. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So again, trying from that visual perspective. We, whoever again is the focal point of delivering the message, the very first thing, let's say you're meeting with some of your, I'll use an Aussie term, a mate. Hey, bud. I don't know the term they use in Great Britain. What's the term there?
They would use mate as well, actually. Yeah. They
okay,
use that
that's
too.
Good. So, but you're meeting at a pub, and from 40 or 50 meters away, you see one of your mates.
Yeah.
What's the very first thing you see and notice about him or her?
I would just know, I would just recognize their kind of face and structure for me.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Good.
But if there's anything else, what might be the first thing that you notice? Again, you haven't even really seen a clear focus of their face before you even notice their face, because it's a good ways away. What might be something that you begin to pick up on?
If they're far away, I'd see their walk, because some people
their
have
walk?
Their walk.
Okay.
Very distinctive walk. Sometimes if they've always got a particular jacket on, they always have a particular pair of shoes.
Okay. Now, see, I love the color that you're wearing today and the color you have in your background. That's the very first thing I notice about you. You're, shall we say, borderline flamboyant, because you have gold, you have gold stars in the background. You have these beautiful purples and I don't know if that's not chartreuse, but what are those colors that you're wearing in the chair behind you?
Yeah, so like I think these colors actually match my backdrop today. So pinks, blues, and purples. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So the thing that I point out to be is very simply this: what you wear, as in your attire, and your grooming, is the first thing that people really see and notice. What you wear. You said it in the fact that you said jacket and shoes.
Yeah.
What people wear begins to tell us about them.
Yes.
A lot, actually.
Definitely.
You know, I could have come into this little time together all buttoned up, because I, believe it or not, I do have a tux and I wear it on special occasions. I have several suits and I've got dozens of these ties that I bought years and years ago. Mm-hmm. Today, we don't wear that kind of stuff in the business environment.
No.
But the very first thing that people see is what are you attired with? So I call it attire and grooming. Mm-hmm. Attire and grooming is the first thing they see, and it begins to tell them about you. Mm-hmm. Are you dressed, shall we say, in a very scanty attire, or are you dressed because of the weather or whatever it might be, with an overcoat, muffs, and ears? I mean, there's so much that we can begin to pick up on.
Yeah.
Person, by the way, they dress or attire and groom themselves. I see you've got these big danglies, as in earrings that kind of dangle. And I bet that's probably par for the course, that you like to wear something like that.
Yep.
I'm not wearing mine today.
No.
Actually, I don't have any. So I'm not into the dangly things.
Yeah.
Don't have a nose ring. Don't have dangly things in my ears. Don't have any ear or lip piercings. I'm kind of in the non-piercing arena. The very first thing we notice moving ahead is attire and grooming. That tells us a lot about the messenger and the message they're trying to deliver to us, because that shows us a part of their personality, how they think, and the kind of message that they potentially may be delivering to us.
Yeah.
Okay. So attire and grooming, number one, from a very far distance, 40, 50, 60 meters away, we begin to see a person, judge a person, and it's subconscious. It's not consciously thinking, why is he wearing that? It's just like, oh, he's wearing something unusual today. The first thing you pick up. All right, so that's the very first thing in the visual, the five aspects of the visual. Attire and grooming. You mentioned the way they walk, and that ties to the second thing, because the second thing is what I call posture and position.
Yes.
Posture and position. Posture and position. Posture is the way you stand, the way you carry yourself, the way you sit, however you're holding your frame, your body shows that you either have a lot of energy, you're in control, and you're able to deliver that dynamism with control and direction, or you're all over the place going crazy.
Like a kid.
Yeah, like a kid.
Like a
kid. I'm a kid at heart, so sometimes I do that kind of crazy stuff. Yeah. But your posturing tells you a lot about the person. Have I played football, American football, in college and high school.
Okay.
But I know in Great Britain or in the UK, it's football as in what we call soccer. So let's say you're at the World Cup, and one team shall we say, Bristol or what's one of those big teams in England?
In football, like Manchester United, Arsenal.
Manchester. So Manchester is the reigning team, and they're crushing everybody else. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, in the World Cup finals, they are crushing their opponents. And you're able to see the sidelines of the opponents. How do you think in the closing minutes of the game, Manchester's opponents would look if they're being beat 5 or 6 or 7?
Yeah, you will barely see them. They'll be just slumped over, or they're arguing amongst themselves, or just often you see them kind of doing this type of move. Mm-hmm. Something like mm-hmm. that. Just hands throwing.
So they're posturing themselves in a position of defeat.
Yeah.
A position of frustration. Mm-hmm. A position of we are beat.
Yes.
So the posturing is a huge piece in the visual. Mm-hmm. That second aspect of the P in the physical arena is the position. Now, right now, I'm at roughly 2.5 to 3 feet from my camera. I can get really up close like that.
Yeah.
Or I can get way, way back. So, but the position is, again, relative to what I'm trying to accomplish with you. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be at the right distance, not too close, mm-hmm. not too far. Mm-hmm. The word I use is proximity.
Yeah.
As in proximics, which is all about distance between you and the person or people mm-hmm. that you're speaking to. So your distance between that person. If you've got an intimate relationship, mm-hmm. typically the distance gets closer and closer mm-hmm. and closer.
Yeah.
If it's not so intimate, then you mm-hmm. keep what we'll call that casual distance between you and the yeah. friend or the buddy or the peer, the mates. And it's comfortable that way.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. So there's your first two, attire and grooming, posture and position.
Yeah.
Posture and position. Number three, you're getting closer and closer to this person. And the next thing you see them do is they're waving at you. A yeah. wave is what I call a gesture. And in that case, a friendly gesture.
Yeah.
And that wave says to you in a non-verbal way, hi, good to see you. Mm-hmm. Hello, friend. So all that we do in the gesturing arena is our body language expressing itself in the message that we're sending. No words attached, no mm-hmm. sounds attached, strictly our body expressing itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the body does express itself oftentimes, again, yes. very unconsciously.
Yep.
Very unconsciously.
Yeah.
So as an example, if I sort of do one of these numbers,
yep.
and I'm turning away from you, what is that really signaling to you at this point in time?
That you're losing interest and something else over that side of the room might kind of be a bit more interesting. So 60% attention.
You got it. And that's so true. So if you as a presenter are noticing your audience members, an audience yeah. of 1, 3, 5, or 15, or 500,
yeah.
and they're starting to show that kind of body gesturing, mm-hmm. or if you are talking to the wall or the ceiling or the floor, rather yeah. than giving them the attention that they require, then all of a sudden the message that you're sending in a visual sense mm. is out of focus. It's out of skew. It's not the way we want it to be.
Yeah, I understand that definitely. So okay. your gestures need to support what you're saying.
Perfect. Well said, Leanne. That's the perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
Your gestures are part of the message. They yeah. need to be supportive of, congruent with mm-hmm. the overall message itself.
Yeah.
Now
I get that.
We've just covered 3 of the 5.
Yeah.
Now we're getting in closer, and we're only maybe 3 or 4. Typically, the first or the next thing that we really focus on at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Facial expressions. Yeah.
Facial expressions. The yeah. face is the place to, again, show the emotions of the moment.
Yes.
The face is the place to feel the emotions of the moment. And if you're joyful and happy to see this friend,
yeah,
what is typically smiling. The face going to say?
Yeah.
It's going to be smiling. The yeah. eyes will be open and bright. So there's all of these facial things that we do to say, I'm so happy to see you.
Yeah.
We're going to have a good time here tonight. Mm-hmm. Let's make this a fun time together. So yeah. the face is the place, and the face really, again, will emote and show a variety of emotions.
Yeah.
There's this thing called a mime, and a mime is a professional man or woman, and they say words. Mm-hmm. It's all with their face and their body that they bring forth the message.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do they deliver their
message? They do.
Oh, yes, they do.
They do. They do. I've seen them.
Not even a sound from their voice, and they deliver their message.
Yeah, it's true. Very, very good.
Okay. Yeah. So that's four.
Four.
The facial expressions is number four. Now, let's get into that tight, tiny little space that is number five.
Okay. Eye contact.
Now, I used to use that phrase, Leanne, but I changed it slightly.
Okay.
Changed it slightly is because we want more than eye contact. Eye contact could be a half or three quarters of it. Like, so I talk about eye connection.
Ah, yeah.
Eye connection. If you're really in tune and wanting to make a strong connection, it is the eye connection, not just the contact, that makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It makes all the difference in the world. The eye connection. Now, some people say, George, I don't want to stare at someone. And that's true. We don't want to stare. We don't want to stare them down. So what do? Well, we hold the connection for 4, 5, 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find a different pair of eyes, and then another different pair of eyes, and then another different pair. So in reality, you know what you're doing? You're speaking to one person 4 to 6 seconds, and then you're finding another pair of what I call happy eyes. And you're speaking to Charlie over here for 4 to 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Then you're speaking back over here to Susan for 4 to 6 seconds. Then you're speaking to Baba over here for 4 to 6 seconds.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. So rather than just like connect, it's to connection, which it's a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. It's a longer period of time. A more intentional, longer period of time. So there's a strong intention. The philosophers have said, and we know this is true, the eyes are the windows of the soul.
Yes.
The eyes are the windows of the soul. So if we are really going to make that window open up and show what we're trying to show, then we need to make a stronger connection.
Yeah, definitely. And that would, for the stronger connection, you need a little bit longer time. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I get that. Nice. Okay. And then what's number six? No, that one only has five. Whoop, whoop, whoop. That one only has five. Vocal. You said vocal has four parts, then verbal has two parts. And I think this part would really help me to really understand it, because I would have probably, just from my training background, I'd have probably grouped them all together because it's the same. The same instrument that it comes from, just from my kind of mindset. I'd really like to hear, how do you break those two groups down?
Mm-hmm. Good. Good question. The vocal is the sound box.
Hmm. Yep.
It's the sound box. And if I speak in a deeper, more resonant sound, it sounds different than if I'm Pee Wee Herman.
Yep. It does.
So the vocal is about the sound, and there are four basic elements of the sound: volume, emphasis, pacing, and pitch. VEPP. Volume, emphasis, pacing, and pitch. Volume, emphasis, pacing, and pitch. Volume is pretty simple. How loud? How soft? Mm-hmm. How loud? How soft?
Yeah.
So the volume, you know, fluctuates. And most of the time we want to keep it at about a 5 or 6, sometimes a 4. Sometimes we'll really jack it up to an 8, 9, or 10.
Yeah.
we're speaking in a two or a three, like a whisper.
Yeah.
So that's what we want in volume, variety. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The other piece that we want some real variety is the pacing, which is the speed. Mm-hmm. The pacing is the speed of the delivery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll slow it down.
Yes.
Almost to a crawl.
Yeah.
Now, in the United States, we have this thing called the Indy 500.
Okay.
The Indy 500 is a car race.
Oh, okay.
And it is on a giant oval, huge oval trackway.
Yeah.
The Indy 500 is all about speed, and more speed.
Wow, okay.
Very different than this thing called the Le Mans. The Le Mans is about open stretches and then tight turns. Mm. Open stretches and tight turns. So Le Mans is not just about speed, it's about also being able to handle those tight turns and slow down and gear down and slow down and gear down and speed up and speed up. And that's really what we're looking for more oftentimes in the pacing. We don't want Indy 500 and wears people out.
Yeah.
We want more of a Le Mans, slow down, speed up. Slow down, speed up.
Yeah.
Most of us speak at about 140 to 160 words per minute. But we might speed up at times. It's, you know, as high as 200 words a minute if we're really excited and trying to get something out.
Yeah, definitely.
Then other times, we'll really slow it down.
Yeah.
Now, emphasis and pitch. Emphasis is about the emphasis that we place on a certain word or phrase. That extra punch that we use on a word or phrase that really kind of brings it into the forefront.
Yeah.
And you can say the same phrase 3, 4, 5, 6 different ways.
Yes.
And it's all about the emphasis you place on a word or a phrase.
Definitely.
Now, finally, the pitch. The pitch is about tone or tonality. And what the research shows is that from a tonality point of view, in light of selling a product or persuading someone, it is typically the deeper, more resonant tones that are authoritative and easier to listen to.
Yes.
The James Earl Jones
or
the Morgan Freeman tone.
Definitely.
Pee Wee Herman.
It's just so hard on the ear, that height.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there it is. That's the vocal. Nothing about words, but the sounds and the way those sounds are delivered. Volume, emphasis, pacing, and pitch.
Got that. I get it. Okay.
I know you do. You're a voice specialist.
I get it. I hope the listeners got that part as well too, because that's really, really key to really make a great speaker. And then what about verbal? How is verbal different from vocal? What two parts really kind of go under verbal?
Okay. If, you know, I kind of, sort of, you know, talk about and throw in sort of a kind of you know what that's called, Leanne? That's called fluff fillers that you don't want, that you don't need, that your listeners don't want or don't need.
No.
So it's as bad as, this is kind of gross, but it's as bad as a booger hanging out of your nose or spinach in your teeth.
Yeah.
It's distracting.
Very distracting. Very distracting.
So we have to eliminate all the fluff and the filler, the non-words like the ums, the uhs, the you knows, the sos, the kind of, all those non-words or non-working words. And then we do one thing.
What's that one thing? Do we actually use the words we should be using to put the message through? Yes, it sounds quite simple.
We do one thing.
Talk.
We pause.
Ah, I like pausing.
We pause. Now, if you're strictly on an audio connection, a long pause will make people think, Leanne, are you still there?
Yeah.
But because I can see you, I can see you're still there. So I don't need to worry about our connection.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm really trying to do is set you up for the next thing that I'm going to say and cause you to digest what I've just said and not try to cram too much into your mental chamber all at one point in time.
Definitely.
So pause, as they say, silence is golden, and a pause is a way to deliver a moment of silence.
Definitely.
There it is. Two things.
Two things.
Eliminate the fluff and the filler, the non-working words, the sounds that just kind of come out.
Definitely.
And replace that with a pause.
Yeah. Wow, that's been brilliant. And that was only question one. Okay. That was, I'm going to kind of.
We're going to run through the rest of this fast now, aren't we?
I'm going to kind of summarize. I didn't know it was in those different parts. So just kind of summarizing about like audio presentations. And I really like the part that you said that they're in three parts and that it's preparation, it's the delivery, and it's the follow through as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what was really key is what is not always kind of, there's not even like you don't even really always learn it at school or things like that in presentations. So always have to be able to relax and have and see it as a conversation, although it could be a conversation if you said one or two or five, it could be thousands. See it as conversations. And what I liked about that we said about conversations is that links back into, I'll go into that part a bit, in when you said in visual about when it's the eye contact, not eye contact, to have an eye connection. And that links in with having a conversation, because when you have a conversation with someone, you do give eye connection, eye contact. You do speak with the eyes at the same time. And I really liked how those two, for me, they really linked through. And it's so true whenever you go to speak, the fear of rejection, the fear of failure, even like when you go to a shop, may have to ask for a product, is this here? There's a chance, 50-50 chance, you're going to get rejected. No, we don't have it, you know, things like that. So it's always, there's always that risk. And even at speaking, like could be a seasoned speaker, could be done it once or whatever. And there's always this, like, there's this fear that kind of comes in and stuff. And I really love these 11 core delivery skills. I wish this could be taught at school when you have to stand up and do a presentation, so that when you learn presentations, you can learn them effectively rather than learning bad presentation skills and trying to get rid of the bad thing when you're older and put in new stuff. That's a harder way to learn. But having visual of the five key components of attire and grooming is so key. It has to match what you're saying and stuff, and posture and position and things like that. That's key, because if you come in there and your shoulders are down, I'm like, I'm not listening to someone like that. I've just made a decision, like whether I've said it or not, my mind has made a decision. Start doing the shopping list when someone comes onto the stage like that, you know, and gestures. They need to support what we are saying. And I'm a big fan of talking, but big fan of facial expressions as well, because I think you can do so much more. And sometimes you can see some people who are speaking that if they would just engage the face a bit more, they wouldn't have to use so many words, because the face would just do a bit more of it for them. And I really love that point, facial expressions. I like that you said, face is the place to show the emotion of the moment. And it can do wonders, you know? And this eye connection, eye contact one, which I felt linked really much so, presentations are a conversation with one, two, or thousands, etc. And I really like how you broke down vocal with verbal. So vocal is, obviously it's come from the sound box. It's the volume. How loud or how quiet you're talking, emphasis, like which words are you gonna hit? harder and stuff, and the pace that you're going to go talk really quickly, which I can often do, and then the pitch with which links to tone and stuff like that, is it soft or etc., and verbal. And I know that I have lots of kind of non-words, ums and sounds and things, but I hope that I can always be more conscious of it, because it is a natural thing when you've not quite got it all smooth, or you're thinking like, oh, what was the next point, or shall I put this point in, is the audience ready to hear this part? But I know the non-words are very distracting to hear, 100%, and pauses. I love dramatic pauses. It's like, if I was a writer, it would be like a full stop or the gap between the paragraph. I get it, and it brings you in. I like you says, it gets you ready, gears you up for the next thing, and I really like that kind of insight on it. Definitely, that was really, really, really good. Wow. Okay. What are we going to talk about next?
So, Lynn, can I stop right here?
Yeah.
I must again point out something. Yes. And this is very important. Very important. You have exemplified the traits of an engaged listener. Mm-hmm. And if we're really going to make a connection, and that's what life is about. It's about making connections. We tend to think our connections are formed because of the words that we speak. No. Actually, it's because of the listening that we exemplify.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The listening exemplifies our intent to connect.
Yes.
I can run my mouth 1,000 miles an hour and spout off all this stuff, but it doesn't really connect us until I take a moment to listen to what you say.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Thank you for listening this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm learning a lot. I feel like I'm going back to school myself. Really, really good. And then thank you for about the 11 core delivery skills. Like, I think we should have another podcast just about those, because there's so much in those ones, so much. But we will not. We'll go on to the next question. And so I wanted to ask the question that we kind of spoke about. What does SAY, S-A-Y, represent in forming the basis for your preparation for a great presentation?
I do my best, because I need this, and I think a lot of people need this, to simplify and clarify what are the most important aspects of whatever part. Now, I would like to cut it back from 11 to 7. Mm-hmm. That would be easier to remember. But as much as I've tried to clean away and clear away, I can't cut back the 11 to 7. We just miss too many things. Mm-hmm. So with the SAY formula, I believe I've given you the three most important aspects of preparation. Mm-hmm. And I've given it to you in a way that's easy to remember. Say. So if I'm going to prepare well, I must know the subject.
Yes.
I must know my audience. Mm-hmm. I must know myself, as in know yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, the first two are pretty self-evident.
Yeah.
Know your subject, know your audience. But it's actually, Leanne, it's actually the self-awareness that is the most important of the three. Mm-hmm. It's the most important of the three. And I'll get to that in a moment, because I want to handle it SAY. Know your subject. In today's world, we're looking for and hoping to hear what's called a subject matter expert.
Yeah.
The abbreviation is a SME. A SME is a subject matter expert, someone who really knows their subject.
Yep.
Someone who deeply knows their subject, someone who spent time and lived, you might say, their subject. Mm-hmm. When you're listening to a subject matter expert, if they know how to deliver well, you just sit there and go,
yeah. Yes.
And you just go, wow. I never saw it that way.
Yes.
And that's what a good subject matter expert can do. They can decorate your mind with all of these little things that you're going, that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And that again is showing their subject matter expertise.
Yeah.
That deep awareness and sense of what will help this subject come alive for this person.
Yeah.
So the subject, knowing your subject is critical, and you can never know too much.
No,
you
definitely.
Never know too much.
Yeah.
I mean, behind me, you see that bookcase?
Yep.
That's one of four.
Wow.
That's yes. one of four. The other three are out in the hallway yeah. back over here between the bedrooms. Yes. So I'm constantly learning. My wife yeah. calls me a bookaholic. I'm addicted. I'm yes. addicted. So anyway, subject matter expertise. Number one, audience. Know your audience.
Yes.
Now, you had mentioned a little bit earlier about your desire to know about DISC, D-I-S-C.
Yes.
And we're going to get to that. But the reality very simply is this. You can look at people and help categorize your audience, that person of one or five or 15 or 500, mm-hmm. in basically one of four general types of ways to describe them, mm-hmm. their behaviors, their thinking, their processing.
Yeah.
And the DISC describes those four different personality styles. And this is insight that was recognized thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. Two guys, Galen and Hippocrates, Greek physicians, mm-hmm. began to record and write about what they called the four humors. And the yes. four humors were what we now call the four basic personality styles.
Yeah.
So that's a very deep subject. We could go on literally for hours about that. But bottom line, understanding, Leanne, you are one or a combination of those four. Mm-hmm. I am one or a combination of those four. Now, the more I can understand who you are, mm-hmm. and who I am, the better I can again make what we call a connection.
Yeah.
If I don't understand what you see and think and need and want, mm-hmm. then I'm going to try here and I'm going to try there and I'm mm-hmm. going to try here and I'm missing the connection. Mm-hmm. But if I say, oh, Leanne is showing me some wonderful aspects of the I and the S. Mm-hmm. And the I and the S tend to be very people-oriented.
Yeah.
Are you a people person?
Yeah, I think so. But then is that like, I don't know, I'm a people person, but then I enjoy my own company at the same time. So I kind of feel kind of
You
mixed.
Are a people. You yes. are a people.
Yes, I'm a people. I can entertain myself and also entertain others. Yeah.
There you go. So, but in understanding people, yourself yeah. and others, then you're able to easier connect. And it makes things more fluid. It makes things more harmonious. It makes things more enjoyable to be able to connect with people and to, in a sense, if you're very different than them, for the time that you're with them, become like them.
Okay.
In the time that you're with them, to become more like them. To talk in their terms, to speak their language, if you will.
Yeah.
And they'll feel that you are really like them. And people love to be around people that are like them.
Yep. Yes.
That's just natural. That's just a normal part of who we are. We like to be around people who are like us. Birds of a feather.
Flock together. Very true.
So knowing your audience, critical in that connection point.
Yeah.
Critical in that connection point. And if I can know my audience, then I'll be better able to relate to him or her or them. Mm-hmm. Finally, and here's the final piece. And we kind of touched on this just a moment ago. The first person that you're interested in connecting with,
the first person, it's myself. Yeah.
It's you.
Definitely, it's myself.
Who's the first person you look at when you're walking to the bathroom in the morning?
Myself.
Man, I need to do something with that face.
Yeah. Yeah.
But have you ever been in a group photo and then looked at that photo after the photo's taken? Who's the first person you look at?
Myself. If there's ever like a writing article or a document that I've contributed to, I don't really care what anybody else has written. I'm looking for my own, even though I wrote it myself. I'm looking for my own writing. I know it. I wrote it. I edited it. I want to know, what did I say? Yes.
Yes. Yes. So this term that's been used for 20 plus years now is a term called emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence, EI or EQ, emotional quotient, emotional intelligence. And the very first foundational piece of emotional intelligence is self-awareness. Self-awareness. If we are truly, deeply self-aware, then we can find out where we're at in this bigger spectrum of behaviors. And then we can understand, because of where I'm at now, this other person's way over here. If I'm going to connect with that other person, then I have to understand first where I'm at, London, East London, or where I'm at, Forney, East Dallas, and understand, for me to go from Forney, East Dallas, all the way to London, I've got to do a lot of traveling.
Yes.
I've got to reach across the pond, shall we speak. I've got to be able to, go a distance to make a true face-to-face connection.
Definitely.
So in understanding self, I am at that focal starting point of being able to connect with others.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the crucial aspect of a great presentation. Yes. You've had people that you've sat in an audience, and they may have been brilliant. They may have been subject matter experts, but if they didn't connect with you and your emotional needs, how quickly are they forgotten?
Very quickly. Very quickly.
You can walk out the door and go, okay, what's our next thing?
Yeah, exactly. And just be, what's next? Yeah.
But if they made a deep emotional connection with you, they understood you, they understood themselves, they understood the aspect of what they were trying to relate to you, but they put it across to you in a way that says, Lynn, the thing that I want to make sure you hear today is, you are a very special person.
Yay.
And that connection point starts the relationship of trust and relationship of communication.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
SAY, subject, audience, subject, yourself.
And know yourself. Definitely. Yeah, it's quite hard to do a good presentation if you've got one of those lacking. I mean, if you're given a script to read, which often happens to me, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just reading off a script. But because I know who it's going to and I know what I can deliver, yes, I can see that. But I love it when you see an expert speaker. And I like to use the term decorate your mind. They can provide your mind with information, make a picture in within your mind just by using their words. That's a really, really great speaker. And really knowing yourself. And that means, and for me, that also means being confident that I can deliver. That I know this information. I know who the audience is. And even more so, I know myself. And I know, even if I've done it tons of times, once of times, I know I can do it. That's the thing. Know yourself. And emotional intelligence, not really spoken about at all. It's more so a push on academic intelligence. And just, I love it, how to connect with others. Because I've been to huge conferences before, you know, some of the huge, you know, popular speaker names, and they always do a connection, whether it means they run down the rally hall giving high fives and stuff, and, you know, giving a personal story, which brings the, it's such a mixture of emotions. We're going from tears to joy to sadness, and it's a bit of a roller coaster. But I remember some of those talks from even 11 years ago. If you ask me if I went to one 3 years ago, last week, sure. But one from 11 years ago, because of how it was structured, the height of emotions and stuff, and the music, boom, 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 it was like really, really, I get that. The need to connect. That's just a basic human need as well. The need to connect. I like
There's,
that.
Very helpful. Do you know the movie Howard's End?
No.
It's a great movie.
Howard's End. Hopefully
Howard's
it's on
End. It's a movie about a British couple.
Ooh.
An English couple, I guess. English, British. And there's one phrase.
Yeah.
There's just one phrase that says it all. Only connect.
Yeah.
Only connect. Mm-hmm. That one simple phrase. And I use that quote quite frequently because that's what people want. Whether it's a personal relationship, whether it's a customer relationship, whether it's a familial relationship with a parent, a sibling, a child.
Yeah.
Only connect.
Yeah. Very true. And I think even that's been so poignant over this kind of length of time, our lockdown still kind of happening, like to have that connection, like, and it raises awareness as well. Like, do you have a connection? How deep or strong is the connection? Or do you have no connection at all? That's really, really true. I want to see that film. I'm going to try and look for it after our call. Definitely. So we spoke about say, S-A-Y. And then you did bring in D-I-S-C because I was like, I don't know what that is. But that's really helped. It took me back a bit to my degree days of personality because I remember we used to do that. I did a psychology and law degree and we did a little bit on the personality spectrum as well. I remember it came up, something similar to that, I think. And I wanted to go on. So we've looked at the core delivery skills. We looked at SAY. We looked at DISC. And another question that I wanted us to talk about is how can you overcome nerves and the fear to speak so that you look and sound more confident? Is it possible to overcome it, or is it something you have to kind of manage and kind of squat? How do you do it, or what tips can you suggest?
Mm-hmm. Good. When I was a small boy, my mother had a major task in working with me. Mm-hmm. It was because I had a speech impediment. And because of that speech impediment, I stuttered.
Yep.
I couldn't pronounce certain words or sounds. Then two of my older sisters were unmerciful to tease me. And my mom recognized that that would not be something that would help me in the future. So she recognized she needed to help me begin to overcome my own personal limitations.
Yeah.
So number one, she was very patient with me. Very loving, very understanding. Mm-hmm. And she helped me begin slowly, but definitely take steps forward in building my confidence.
Yeah.
But my confidence grew because my skills grew, Lynn. If you think about everything that you know today, and you're a mature, confident, polished professional, everything that you know, and the reason you have the confidence you have today is because you have learned a certain skill.
Yeah.
And then you practiced it.
Yeah.
And then you learned another skill and you've practiced it. And you've learned another skill and you've practiced it. And think about this. If you don't practice a specific skill for a period of time, what begins to happen with your confidence over that period of time?
It goes. Yeah.
Did you see my hand? My hand is
it goes down.
It goes down. Is that strange or what?
Yeah.
You think once you hit it, you'd stay there.
Yeah. Doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work that way. No. So what really I help the people that I coach recognize very simply is we're all on different levels, on different skill sets. We all have a different level of confidence on different skill sets, but we can all continue to increase our confidence if we're ready and willing to practice that new skill set. So confidence grows as skill sets are learned and practiced and maintained. That's again, a critical. And maintained.
Yes.
Just say, well, man, I was up here at the top of my game. And all of a sudden I'm going, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just one of those very simple aspects of life. How do we build confidence? We learn the right skills.
Yes.
We practice the right skills. We maintain the right skills.
Definitely.
Have I seen myself decrease and increase in skill sets through the years?
I have. Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, do I want to exert the time, energy, and effort to rebuild that? And
yeah.
If it's important, if it's truly valuable and important, I'll say, yes, I must get back to where I once was. Mm-hmm. I will set up the time, the energy, the effort to rebuild those skill sets.
Yeah.
And then get the commensurate confidence that goes with that higher level of skill.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like that. That's really, really, really helpful. Just practicing the skill set will bring in the confidence. And it's like, I think of like myself, like there was a time I hadn't ridden a bike in years and I was like, I probably can't do it. I got on the bike, I was a little bit shaky, but I was like, after a while, I was like, oh, it just kind of came back to me. And obviously I couldn't go and do Tour de France or anything, but I was like, wow, I've still got it. And even if I haven't driven it has to be for like more than a month or two, I do kind of feel like, oh, I don't think I'm going to be that nippy at doing all the turns. Because in London, you need to be a skilled driver because the roads are really small. There are a lot of unskilled drivers, but, you know, just to manage the small roads and the other drivers, and but it does come back. And when you were describing it to maintain it, it reminded me of when Usain Bolt was getting all of those Olympic gold medals, 1, 2, 3 times. And those are like a space of 4, 8, that's 12 years. It's every 4 years he was doing that. So that's a lot of work to focus on the skill set and then keep peaking at the right time, because he has to peak at the Olympics and to maintain it. It's a lot of work to go into the behind the scenes and things. And that really kind of made me think, okay, to be an excellent speaker, it's not just like, yes, I'm a great speaker of this much. It's to keep on growing and trying to maintain it. The maintenance is where that work is going to be, I think, a lot of it, because anybody can escalate and get, yeah, I'm a great speaker, but how do you maintain that? That's the work, the maintenance.
I'm a great speaker.
Yeah, yeah.
That was good use of your vocal right there. See, you know, pitch change in there.
Yeah.
but that's really the simplicity of it. And all the research over and over and over in every realm shows the same thing.
Yeah.
It just shows the same thing that, you know, you may be born genetically and physiologically to be at a higher level of performance. Like Usain Bolt, as an example, you bring him up.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt has a good start, but not a great start. Part of the reason he doesn't have a great start is because he's got those long legs.
Yeah.
And it takes him a while to get those long legs really moving.
Yeah.
But at about 40, 50, 60 meters, those long legs are churning.
Yeah.
And just starts getting further and further and further ahead of the competition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just understanding. Out of the blocks, he's average or a little above average.
Yeah.
But it's in the time on the track and the time to build the momentum where all of a sudden you just go, nobody can touch this guy.
No one. No one.
You know?
Yeah.
And that comes true with every arena of our life. Every single arena of our life. It's the same way. If you don't touch a keyboard for a month, you can sit back down and you go, okay, where are my fingers on the keyboard?
Yes.
If we don't get behind the wheel for a month or a couple of months and go, okay, got to be more conscious
about
what we're doing.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And I think that as like you said, it goes into many, many areas, not just speaking. Definitely the skill set and maintaining it as well, definitely. And I wanted us to move on from the nerves and the fear to speak, going on to, I like that when we've got questions, they've got like 3 parts or 4 parts or 7 or different parts. So it's kind of like a bigger question. So the next question I wanted to talk about is, what are the 3 basic parts of a great presentation? Because I would have usually thought it's introduction, body, and the close, which is what a lot of people tell you. It's often how it's structured in school, how you write your essays, you need an introduction, the middle bit, and a conclusion. Mm-hmm. Always the same. But what is, why are those not the 3 basic parts of a great presentation?
Yes. Well, in the delivery, those are the 3 parts. Mm-hmm. But I look at, again, a great presentation as being much broader, much bigger. And that's why I touched on earlier the preparation, the delivery, and then the follow-through. The preparation, the delivery, and the follow-through. And And when I've asked the point, after I've made those three separations of people, what's the most important of those three bigger picture pieces? And most people say, well, it's probably preparation. And I go, that's not a bad guess.
Yeah.
But in the bigger picture, it's not really the most important. It's number two, but it's not the most important. Now, why would I say that? If you know anything, as an example, about the game of tennis or the game of golf or the game of baseball or the game where there's any kind of instrument to move the ball, you know, Wimbledon, you got right there in your, you know, your backyard, anything that's, it is not the contact with the ball that makes the difference. What makes the difference, Leanne? What makes the difference?
It's the power behind the racket, though, isn't it?
It's the follow through.
Ah, the follow through.
It's the follow through. Because if your racket hits the ball and then doesn't follow through, if your club hits the golf ball but doesn't follow through, if your bat hits the ball but doesn't follow through.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, because you can always see the motion, because they don't just hit it and pull it back. They make it go all the way. Like
if your foot hits the football, but doesn't follow through,
no, it's not going to have the impact. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So that is then the bigger picture. So if we're going to have something positive from the point of view of this material that we've shared today, the only way it's really going to have the kind of long-term impact and positivity is the follow-through. What does that really mean? That means review.
Yeah.
And review and review, otherwise known as practice, practice, practice.
Yeah.
A great coach can teach his footballers, gentlemen, this is how you put that ball into the net.
Yes.
But if they don't practice that exact movement, nothing happens.
Yeah.
No improvement, no growth, no real confidence, because they have not put in the time, energy, and effort to practice the right skill repetitively.
Yeah. Just when you're talking about that, it just came to mind, because we're talking about a lot of sports. It's not a big sport for me, but it is big. But basketball, because on Netflix, there's Michael Jordan's show, kind of documentary, The Last Dance. And then obviously earlier on in this year, sadly, when Kobe Bryant passed away, a lot of footage came out about the extra work, the hours he would put in, like within that industry, how many people would put in the extra hours, not just come to training, but go hours before, stay hours after, a lot. And you know, and we only just see the game, you know, but there's hours. Yeah.
See that is the game.
Yeah.
This is the practice.
Yeah, definitely so. It is. It's a lot. And then you think, if people are doing that to play basketball, people are doing that to do tennis, people are putting the extra to do athletics, what more so must you do to speak? It's, you know, there's a lot behind it, a lot more. Yeah. I just, when you were talking about practice, because that was a theme throughout that show, and often the stuff that was said earlier as well. A lot. Yeah, I don't think practice makes perfect for me, because I don't know if I'll ever be perfect. I don't think I ever want to be, but I think it does give, like what you said, it instills confidence and increases for me my skill set.
Can I give you a new word?
Yeah.
I want to give you a new word.
Definitely.
Practice makes excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Perfection is unachievable.
I think so.
But practice, especially with good coaching, makes excellent. And if we're all striving for excellence, Leanne, then we can have our own level of personal excellence, and nothing else really matters.
Definitely. I like that. Practice makes excellence. Definitely. I like that. Everybody strive for their own excellence. Yay.
That's the key.
Yeah. For there.
So are you going to need to break up this interview in two or three parts?
Wow. We might do. We might do part one and then do part two. Maybe. I'm on to the last question now, actually. Yay, we're on to the last question. So this last question, well, kind of part A and part B. What exciting things are happening in your business that our listeners might be interested in staying in touch with you to find out about, that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. Well, one thing is what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. The ability to connect with people all over the globe via this incredible technology. It's mm-hmm. not perfect. It still has glitches. It still has a little bit of difficulty like you and I experienced it. But the biggest thing is there's an ability now to connect with people globally.
Yeah.
Practically at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And it is astounding to me to be able to do the kind of thing that you and I are doing now. Now, that's leading me to deliver something. I have had, in the last several months, two really sweet young women, one from Portugal, one from France, from Paris.
Nice.
Join me for what I offer four times a week. Wow. Four times a week, I offer a free, F-R-E-E, free, no strings attached, free, safe. It's a safe environment to practice and get coaching on what we're doing right now. So it's what I call me for free and ask me anything.
Yay.
Me for free and ask me anything. And I'll give you that link to the meetup.com location where they can register and they can see the four sessions I offer every single week, 45 minutes long. It's short. It's sweet. It's we get in, we get some stuff done. Every single person gets a chance to practice, get some coaching feedback, get some peer feedback, and then get a what I call a little nugget of wisdom that I always deliver at the tail end to say, this is something then you need to know and understand and begin to practice. And so they walk away with a chance to practice, which is critical. And then they also walk away with a new little nugget, a new little tip, a new little principle that they can consider as they go forward. Four opportunities every week.
That two sounds on Tuesday, great.
One on Wednesday, one on Thursday, different times of the day.
Yeah.
And so that is my offering to the world.
Yeah.
So I've got people that have joined me, like I said, now from literally Europe, from all over the United States, and we just have a blast because it's conversational, it's relaxed, it's safe, and they have fun in the bigger picture. And that's the main thing. If they're having fun, they want to come back and do it more and more and more.
Yeah, sounds great. That sounds like a great thing. So it's four times a week, and it's every week, and it's a safe place for them to practice speaking, and they get feedback from you, feedback from their peers. And it's on the meetup.com. Like, who wouldn't want to go? Yeah, definitely. Why not?
Yeah. And you know, if you're UK and have that beautiful British accent, then you add a little extra spice into the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Whereas in the case of these two ladies, they had sort of a French accent. Mm. Then it just, the rest of us go, oh, I love your accent. And there's a lot of entertainment and a lot of camaraderie and a lot of conversation, and people learn and have a good time.
Sounds brilliant. Definitely. I'll definitely put the link in the show notes for that one. And then just kind of coming in for a close now. And do you have any final thoughts, George, that you'd like to kind of share with our listeners about anything you've said today or something else that's come to mind?
Mm-hmm. Good. Leanne, this may shock you and the listeners as well. There are four basic aspects of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Two are outgoing, two are incoming. Two are outgoing, two are incoming. The two that are incoming is by way of reading and listening. The two that are outgoing are speaking and writing.
Mm.
Four basic kinds of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've spent a lot of time, almost an hour, right at an hour, over an hour.
Yeah.
We've talked about just in the arena of speaking.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, speaking is not the most important skill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I alluded to it a little bit earlier. You know what I believe is truly the most important skill? The most important skill to help us connect with other people?
Listening. I think I learn a lot when I listen. I think I learn more when I listen rather than I talk, because I know what I know, but I don't know what everyone else knows. So that's why I like to listen. Yeah.
Leanne, you've hit it. That's the magic button.
Yeah.
That's the magic button. Mm-hmm. The book that I'm reading right now is A More Beautiful Question. Mm. And if you're going to ask questions, then you have to listen to the answer.
Yes.
And asking good questions and then really, truly, deeply listening to people makes all the difference in our ability to connect. And the world would be a different place if we were less about talking and more about listening.
Yeah.
So if I could ever impart a nugget of wisdom, that would very simply be, use the foundation of all communication, listening, to a much greater degree.
Yeah.
Your life, your relationships will be so much better.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's really, really poignant to end our conversation on. Excellent, excellent. And thank you so much for that. I've learned so much. I've taken notes. So I can't wait to write up. I'm going to put this on my Instagram page when it's the release date and stuff. I'm really excited about this one going out. What people are going to say, what they've learned, what they're going to implement. It's going to be a good one. Do you want to share like your social media links, or do you want me to put them in the show notes? You want to just say them?
Put it in the show notes. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I've got a website that's in the process of being updated and renewed, so it's not the first place I tend to send people.
Yeah.
But I love to make more connections on LinkedIn. I love to have people connect with me on Facebook. And, I just love the social interaction and the opportunity to drop a little nugget of value into someone's life.
Yeah.
And then especially say, George, you shared something that made a difference in my life.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Wow. That's been so great, George. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I've learned so much. I've laughed as well. I've learned, I've listened, I've tried to do everything, take notes. It's been such a great, time really. And I was like saying to you, we'll only be about 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and we're still here, but it's such a huge topic. It's so hard to say, right, we'll only do it for this amount of time and we're not going to say anything more, but it's a huge part of communication. I've really learned so much. You've added so much value to the podcast, and I cannot wait to get this one out. I'm really, really excited. So thank you so much, George, for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, Leanne. It has truly been a joy for me. God bless you.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for listening, watching, reading the podcast, etc., all about speaking tips. I hope you learned so much and you're going to be putting stuff into practice this very day, this week, this month. Come on, we've given you so much good information. You need to go and do something with it. All I'd ask for you to do is, you know the drill. If you haven't already, please subscribe, like, do a nice review for me. Let me know what you liked about today's podcast, where you think I can improve, whatever help do you want, what do you want to hear or see being done in my next upcoming podcast or videos, let me know. So whatever platform you're listening, please feel free to do a review. And you know, you can always get hold of me on Leanne@leannesvoice.com. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast.